Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It is Pancakes. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Pancakes, live on Tribe Family Channel. Almost every child loves pancakes. I know my children did. But in this case, Pancakes stands for poets, artists, narrators, comedians, actors, kids, entrepreneurs, and spoken word, all live on Tribe. Tribe Family Channel is hosting children's authors, poets, and others who bring educational content to our very first ever Saturday morning children's programming, Pancakes. Today, our guest is Ms. Jackie Gardner, children's author and literary genius, if you will. We are, speaking of geniuses, sponsored by Genius is Common. Visit our sponsor at geniusiscommon.com. Speaking of geniuses, I would like to introduce our co-host, Kiasi Helm. Ms. Kiasi.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Awesome, awesome. It's wonderful to be back here with you live on Pancakes. Tell our audience a little bit about you and what your bullying prevention guide for parents, kids, and adults is all about, since you are one of the sponsors for Pancakes.
Sounds good to me. Okay, so my name is Kiasi Helm, and I'm a public speaker and children's author of 12 books, and I write about different morals and ethics for both children and adults. And the most recent book that my father and I and my family have come up with is The Bullying Guide, which is a book that enables parents, children, adults, teachers, anybody to really talk about bullying and kind of open up that dialogue so you can be more involved, I guess.
Wonderful, wonderful. We're so honored to have you as a sponsor of Pancakes. Where can people find the bullying guide?
You can go to www.writtenbykids.com to find the bullying guide.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. And we have a special guest, J.C. Gardner, Ms. Jackie, as we like to call her. Ever since the age of 12, she was inspired to be an author. Writing stories became an escape and a way for her imagination to come alive on handwritten pages of steno pads, notebooks, and journals. One of her books that we'll be talking about is called Big Mistake, a novel for adolescents, which was published in 2014. Welcome, Ms. Jackie. How are you?
I am doing fine. I'm blessed to be here. I thank you and your co-host, Kiasi, for allowing me to be here with you this morning. I'm very excited.
It's an honor and a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much. I am very excited to talk about Big Mistake. I can't wait.
We are excited as well. We're excited as well. So let's find out a little bit about you for the kids before we get into Big Mistake. Mm-hmm. And Kiasi has some wonderful questions for you. So let's get it all set up. So first, tell us, Ms. Jackie, where are you from?
I am originally from New York. As I say, I've hit all the five boroughs except for Staten Island. Born in the Bronx, raised in Queens. Went to school in Long Island and worked in Manhattan. So I am definitely a native New Yorker, and I moved to Maryland about 23 years ago. And so now I'm based in the suburbs of Baltimore. That's where I'm currently at.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Well, before we find out about Big Mistake, we're going to allow some questions from our co-host, Ms. Kiasi Helm. And at the conclusion of that discussion, we'll get into what Big Mistake is about and have you read an excerpt, okay?
All right, excellent.
All right, Kiyasi, I'm turning it over to you.
Sounds good to me. Okay, I'm super duper excited to be talking to you, so thank you, Miss Jackie. My first question is, what kind of things do you write about, and has it changed over the years? Because I know you were talking about how you started out writing at a very young age, just like me.
Yes, indeed. I write about a lot of different things. I write poetry. I write articles that have been published in various publications online and in print. I still, to this day, write short stories. I have written songs. I have written plays, and I also do stuff that's like for the professional business field, like press releases and resumes, concept papers, and things of that nature. So I'm always doing some sort of writing. I even do a little rapping, like really little. I used to do it a lot more when I was younger, but I write raps every now and then, or I'll just bust out in a rap randomly at work, and it just lightens the mood, and everybody will just crack up, like, really? Okay.
That's amazing.
So, over the years, yes, I would like to say that my writing has definitely changed over the years, because you get different life experiences. I wasn't going to say every year you have a different life experience, but actually, every day, you have a different life mm-hmm. experience. So something that I may have written last week would definitely not be the same as this week because of something I've either witnessed, read about, experienced, dreamed about. It might totally change the direction of the story. So definitely my writing has changed over the years. I would like to say that I believe it has gotten stronger because I've learned a lot. It's gotten better. I would like to think it's gotten better. It's gotten more real. I've been striving to get that more real feeling. And I read a lot of other fiction authors because that's really my niche is fiction. And I like to see how they weave a story or what made them get my attention and how can I incorporate some of their techniques into my writing so that it can be the best it can be.
Definitely, definitely. I always like to, you know, save things I've written about and kind of compare it to things I'm writing now and kind of look back mm-hmm. and see how much I've improved. I think that's always the best thing to do.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Awesome. My second question is, can you tell us about your favorite book and what inspired you to write it?
Okay. When you say my favorite book, do you mean the favorite book that I've written?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Actually, I've written 4 books in total, but I've only published 2. And all mm-hmm. of my books, this question was, I like this question, but I actually do not have a favorite of one of my books because I really love all of them. Because for each mm-hmm. book that I've written, the third one will hopefully be published by or before the end of the summer. That's my hope. But all of my books are near and dear to my heart because when I'm writing, I'm usually writing because these invisible characters showed up in my life. They're in my car. They're at my work. They're in my bedroom. They're in the shower. They're everywhere. And they just hound me until I tell their story. And I'm like, really? You really have this story? And they come with their own baggage and their own look and their own feel. And they have their own message that they want me to get across. And they will not leave me alone, Kiyasi. It sounds mental. It sounds mental. But it's really how I write. It's just I'll wake up and there they are looking at me and I'm looking at them and only I can see them. And I'm like, okay, you have a story. And sometimes I try to tell them, all right, hold off, I'm in the middle of something, and they won't let me alone until I actually put it on paper. So both books that are out now, Big Mistake is dear to my heart because it's about adolescence. And my other book, which is for adults, is called Sinful Liaisons. That's dear to my heart also. And then I have 2 other books I've written. And like I said, one hopefully will be published by the summer. But I also love that, too, for different reasons. So each of them I love for different reasons. They have different messages. They have definitely different people. And I enjoy working with the fictional characters that show up. They're very taxing and time-consuming, but at the same time, I learn a lot from them as well.
Definitely. I can definitely relate to what you're saying, especially with mm-hmm. my poetry. I also write poetry, mm-hmm. in case I didn't tell you that. And I definitely understand what you're saying when you say that all of them hold a different meaning. So
yeah.
there's not really one, I guess, that you can really choose that's your favorite. I mean, I guess yeah. it depends on the person, though. And another thing I really related to that you said was, you know, about your characters and how they're kind of following you. Except for me, it's more, when I write my books, I guess I kind of relate to my characters more. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
how you
yeah,
really try to immerse yourself into the character and, you know, kind of write from their perspective.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes, I definitely understand what you're saying. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
my next question is, you said you were a public speaker, and I was just wondering, you know, what kind of things you like, you know, speaking about.
Mostly my speaking is all done from my life experiences. I try
mm-hmm.
to encourage people to push past their hurts from the past, to pursue their dreams and gifts and really walk and live in their destiny, only because I experienced that kind of, I don't want to say depression, but it was a depression of sorts because my gifts were depressed, or suppressed is probably a better way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
My destiny or my desires to be an author early in life, you know, was sort of snatched away from me, but I came out of it on the other side in a positive way. So it's like I can relate to people who had a dream or who had a desire and it just got squashed, and they may think that it's done, I'm finished, I can't move on, I can't do it anymore. But yes, you can. Yes, you can.
Mm-hmm.
So when I speak to larger audiences, that is my message. Like, I did it, I know that you can do it, and we can do this walk together. I can help you overcome that feeling of self-doubt. Now, that's not to say that J.C. Gardner, myself, Jackie, that's not to say I still do not feel self-doubt sometimes or I still don't feel worthy, but I've learned different ways to push past it. I've learned how to overcome it. A lot of it has to do with your foundation, and believe it or not, your circle of friends, your circle of support is so very important. I mean, we're not really put on this earth to be alone or be by yourself. We're here to support each other. That's how God wants us to be with each other. We're supposed to uplift each other, not tear each other down. So because of my, you know, very good circle of support, my faith, and people like you, Kiasi, and even Miss Beverly, because of that, I am able to continue to live and do what I'm supposed to do as far as my talents and gifts.
Definitely. That's very, very good. You know, that kind of reminds me of... sorry. That kind of reminds me of a time I went to go speak up at a troubled youth camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Northern Michigan. And it was kind of people who were abused or were doing things that weren't very good, or like you have had, you know, have gone through that kind of point in life where, you know, you feel so insecure and your dreams are crushed, you know. And I remember speaking to them about, I believe it was bullying and self-love, and it was just the best experience ever because
mm-hmm.
I was younger than most of them, you know. I'm only 14, and I think I was about 12 at the time. And it was just so amazing seeing how I affected them so much. And
mm-hmm.
the whole time I was like, wow, I have the ability to influence people so much. And it's so
mm-hmm.
amazing to know that,
yes.
you know, when people know that they're not alone, you can definitely influence them, especially in a positive light. So that's very,
yes.
that's very amazing. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, no problem.
And
the work that you are doing is also fantastic. At such a young age, I mean, you definitely are able to influence really where it begins, you know. So you're doing fantastic work.
Definitely. And speaking of everything you were just talking about, I actually watched one of your Genius is Common videos on YouTube.
Oh,
and,
yes.
you know, you mentioned that your dream to be a writer was broken by one of your teachers at a young age.
Yes.
And I was just wondering if you had any advice for children that could possibly be facing the same thing right now.
Okay, the thing about that to me is if children are told that they can't, that they won't, that you're not able to. When you're young like that, adults sometimes, I don't want to say they forget, but they don't realize how that actually can affect the child's destination, how they can actually change where the child is supposed to be. And it's very, I don't know, I think I say this a lot, and I've said it before, a lot of people are in the wrong profession, Kiasi. They're not where they're supposed to be. They're not where they should be because of something else that may have happened that changed their life direction. So therefore, when they see a child that might be outshining them, so to speak, or that's just brilliant, they can't even handle it because they were not allowed to share their own brilliance for whatever reason or for anything that may have happened in their past. So it really is a problem, I believe. It's a big problem in schools, not just in schools and parenting and in our society in general. So for children who know that they have a love or a gift, it's really difficult, but my suggestion would be if somebody tells them, no, you can't be a seamstress, or you can't be a fashion designer, or you can't be a baker, that's silly, that doesn't make sense. I encourage any children listening to this right now to go and find that supportive person, that supportive adult that is going to allow them to at least share their dreams, share their desires, you know, at least have an outlet or someone who they know that believes in them. Sometimes it is their guidance counselor in school, or sometimes it is a different teacher or a pastor or someone that they do bond with, and that is where they need to align themselves in order to protect what God has placed inside of them so that they are able to grow into who they are supposed to be.
Definitely. I've had friends and teachers that have just, you know, told, when people tell you, I guess, that you can't do something, for me, it makes me want to prove them wrong. You know, it's like, oh, you think I won't be a writer? I'm going to write 12 books, you know what I mean? You have to prove them wrong. You have to keep going. And if you enjoy what you do, you need to keep doing it. And that's why it's so important to surround yourself around people who support you and want you to be successful and to succeed in life.
Exactly.
You know, there's no
very
use
important.
In having all that negative energy surrounding you. It's definitely a huge issue.
It is a really big issue. I wanted to say this, too, that one time I was at I was doing a book event, and a guy came over to me after I had done my talk, because I always talk about it just to let people know you're not alone. And he told me, he said, he was over 40 years old, and he said when he was in school, he was an A student. He was an A-plus student. He was on a roll, and he really wanted to play professional football, and he was in the 10th grade, and he was having a meeting with his guidance counselor, and he was, what, 15, 14 or 15, maybe 16, no more than 16, and the guidance counselor, after they went over his record, said to him, I see you play football, but I hope that you're not thinking that you're NFL material, because that's very unlikely. And he told me when the counselor told him that, it did something to him. It affected him in a way that he walked out of that office saying, what's the use then? And his grades plummeted. He was no longer an A student. He was no longer on the honor roll. He became a C student at best, and he lost his zeal and zest for wanting to succeed. So he definitely could relate to what I was saying, and that's the whole thing, is that there's people out here that's not going to have your back, that's going to be jealous, that's going to not see in you what you know is in you. And like you and I just said, you have to be able to surround yourself with supportive friends and those who you know are going to have your back, because it's very easy to be taken off the train track. It's very easy, you know. So I definitely agree with you. Support is very key. And like you said, too, I like the fact that you said, oh, you think I can't do it? Well, I'm going to prove you wrong. And that's an excellent attitude. It's just everyone doesn't have the forethought to think that way, or they're not assertive that way. I was one that was not assertive that way at the time. And inside, I was hoping to be that person, but I was afraid. And fear plays a really big part, too, in why people also don't pursue their dreams and their desires.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's also another form of bullying, even with teachers.
Mm-hmm.
When someone tells you you can't do something or makes you feel bad in any way, that is another form of bullying that needs to be addressed.
I definitely totally agree with you.
Another question I have on that topic is, what advice do you have for adults that could have faced the same thing at a young age?
It still goes back to, it's not trying to be repetitive, but the thing about it is, for me, it was, I believe, for me, because I am a Christian, so I have a lot of faith. And what happened with me in particular is I had a come-to-Jesus moment. I had a moment in my life where I was very angry about not being a published author and watching other people who didn't have any desire to write a book all of a sudden write books and be published and have stuff being sold, and I didn't understand why that was happening with me. God really got my attention to say, I don't know what the problem is here. I never said you couldn't write. That's what you have believed all your life because of words that happened to you years ago. So it was a breakthrough moment for me, and from that time period, I've been able to move past it. But for other adults who have been in my boat, where they believe that they should be doing something else, that they wake up every day knowing that this job, this desk job, is not what they're supposed to be doing, okay? This customer service job, have you ever talked to a customer service person and they have just been the most nastiest thing, like on the phone and, or you're at the counter and you're thinking, wow, this person is really just not helpful to me. You know, I'm sure your parents probably have experienced that, or even you know, if you're going to buy something and the clerk is just not even paying attention or just slamming your change down or just not helpful, I believe those people are displaced. They're not where they're supposed to be. They had a different destination, but they were not able to get there because of something someone told them. So for adults who are caught, I'm going to call it a vortex. For adults who are caught in that vortex, they need to do some serious soul searching about where do they want their life to be. For me, in addition to having that spiritual breakthrough, I didn't want to be 95 years old saying woulda, shoulda, coulda. I shoulda did this. I would have done that. I mean, why did not? I don't want to be that person years and years from now who had a chance to do what I know I was supposed to be doing and didn't do it. That's where you have to sit down, pray, talk to yourself, and make a plan and write it out. See, for me, writing is spiritual. Writing is freeing. When I'm writing, I am at my best. So I would encourage people who have a dream to sit down and write out, what do you want to do with your life? You're not happy where you are now, but you know you want to be somewhere else. That's number one. Number two, share your dreams with someone who you know is going to be supportive. Number three, make, a lot of people call it a vision board, or make a plan, or draw an outline of how you will get to the point of making your dream happen. Now, these things for a lot of us, especially us adults who are very set in our ways, are not going to happen overnight. You're not going to wake up tomorrow and own a bakery. You're not going to wake up tomorrow and be a fashion designer. So you have to have perseverance, and you have to also be patient that it's going to happen. Because, one, you've already confirmed within yourself and within your spirit this is what you're going to be doing. This is where you need to be happy. Number two, you've established your support group. So you know that your support group is going to be there no matter what, 24/7, rallying behind you, holding your hand if necessary, being on the other end of that phone in the middle of the night, crying with you, and also rejoicing with you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then number three, you're going to have to see what in your life you need to change. You might need to make some changes to make things happen. Once again, it's not going to happen overnight, especially if you're dependent on your full-time job. But you can actually take some steps to make some changes so that you can start to see your dreams actually come to fruition. And that's one of the things I do as a writing coach. I coach so many people who have a story to tell, but they're scared. They want to be a writer, but they've been told they can't write. Okay, that's fine. You may not be the best grammar queen or king, but that's why there's other people who have that skill set. But you can still be a writer. So a lot of times as adults, too, we create our own obstacles. We create our own mountains. We create our own wall. And a lot of times we're afraid to tear it down, to get past it, because what is on the other side can be scary. We don't know what's on the other side, but you have to have faith that that's where you're supposed to be and then press forward to get there. And you don't have to do it alone. And I'm going to tell you something else, Kiasi. A lot of people always say, that happened in the past. Leave the past behind you. Why are you focusing on the past? You need to move forward from the past. Okay, that sounds very simple. That sounds so simple. But for some adults, the past is living with them. Okay, the past that they're trying to let go and break free from is on 2 feet and it's living with them. Or the past is at lunch with them. They're having lunch with the past. Or they're at work with the past. So the past is not always things that happen. Sometimes the past is people you have to let go of. And that is very difficult. You know what I mean? It's really hard to let go of that person you've been with for years and years, even though every time you turn around, they're tearing you down. They're not building you up. They have negative things to say. They're not encouraging you. But because, you know, maybe you like something that they do, you think you need to stay connected, or you don't want to hurt their feelings, but all the while your feelings are being hurt. So the past, a lot of times, too, is what makes us. If this hadn't happened to me with this teacher in the past, this is my spiritual walk. I believe I could have been freed a little bit sooner if I wasn't so afraid. But once this past happened to me, I'm not able to help others break free from their past and move on to the next level.
Definitely.
I feel like I'm doing a lot of talking, so I'm going to be quiet.
No, it's amazing. I like listening to you. No, don't worry, you're doing well. You know, I thought that was some really good advice, and some advice I usually give is don't wait, start now, because I believe that if you really want to, you know, succeed and do what you want to do, you have to start now. You have to start pursuing what you want to do. And, for example, if you want to be a doctor, I know, you know, kids would be like, you know, when I grow up, I want to be a doctor. But, you know, you have to start now. You have to start surrounding yourself with knowledgeable people that can help you or information that you know you'll need. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
If you keep putting it off, it's not going to happen. It's not
going to
happen.
That's right. It's not
going
to happen.
I'll do it later.
And the other thing is with us, I think that we need to be gentle with each other, more gentle with each other. Our words can cut like a double-edged sword. And once you slice something, if you think about the analogy or the vision, okay, of something being cut or sliced open, right? Even when you glue it back or scotch tape it back, it still has a crack. Okay? So when you cut somebody with your tongue, you know, it's damaging. It's very damaging, you know. We do forgive, we do accept apologies, but that feeling, sometimes there's a sticky residue that's left behind of the injury that was caused. You know what I mean? And every time you look at that wound, it's still, you can still see that there was some damage done. It's healed over now. And sometimes we can move past that verbal attack, sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But in the back of our mind, especially for adults, in the back of our mind, we're like, oh, yeah, we're hanging out now, but I still remember when you said those nasty things to me.
Mm-hmm.
And with children, the hurtful and demeaning things, a lot of times that crack doesn't heal at all. It remains like an open wound. And every time they look at it, it hurts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be more gentle with each other and be careful what we're saying to each other. You know, everybody doesn't have thick skin. Everyone is not a strong flower. Some of us, it doesn't take much for us to just wilt and fall to the side. And then there's nobody there for some people to pick them up again. So they just stay sort of feeling like an outcast, like I'm just out here all by myself in pain because of what somebody said. So words are very important. And I just think, you know, as a society, we need to just be more loving and more gentle with each other.
Mm-hmm. You know, you can't take back what you said. You always have to be alert, you know, because
words,
they will stick with someone all the way throughout their whole entire life, because they'll always question why you said what you said, and it'll stop them from doing things and just, you know, flourishing, being the person they could be. And I just wanted to say, when you were talking about people not being where they're supposed to be, I want to say that if you aren't doing what you love, why are you doing it? Because it's all about passion and doing what you love. Why live your life doing something you hate when you could be spending your days, you know, looking forward to things? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I totally agree. Yes, I do. I actually try to keep that in mind when I'm talking to somebody on the phone, customer service-wise, or no matter where I am and dealing with the public, and if they're just, you know, happy, I try to say to myself, okay, this person did not aspire to have this job. It's obvious. They're not doing it well, and I try to keep that in mind because we don't know what goes on in people's lives. There's another little story I'll tell. There's a diner near my job. And there's a woman in the diner, and she's the cook. She's the line order cook, and she has a very, I don't want to say sour disposition, but she's very serious. You know, when you place your order with her, she's very stoic and, okay, I have your order, and she doesn't make a lot of eye contact. So one day I went in the store, and I actually started joking with her. I mean, just cracking J.C. Gardner jokes, you know, just being myself and like just teasing her about how she was preparing the sandwiches. And she just started laughing and smiling. And next thing you know, she and I have an excellent rapport. And when I tell people that, they look at me like, oh, no, she's the meanest thing ever. I'm like, no, how have you been treating her? See, see, we always want to think it's the other person. We never want to think it's us. And the day I brought her a Christmas gift, this little line order cook, she was in tears and in shock. She said, why are you giving me this gift? Why? I said, you work so hard behind this counter every day, dealing with customers day in, day out. You deserve a little gift. This is not anything major. I said, it's just my appreciation for what you're doing day in and day out, dealing with people, being here. Sometimes it's us. If we break the ice a little bit, it might help the other person also feel wanted and appreciated. And then at the same time, she's not a mean person. She may have to have that facade up because she's dealing with the public. The public can be rough. It goes back to what I said earlier about how we treat each other and being gentle with each other. And that's not always going to work. Some people you're going to joke with, and they're still going to be looking at you like, I'm not having that today. I'm still going to be miserable. And that's okay. But at least put forth an effort sometimes to bring the sunshine into somebody else's cloudy day.
Definitely. You know, I wanted to go back to what we were talking about before, mm-hmm. while we were talking about the teacher, that whole incident. And
yes.
I just have one more question on that, because I think
yes.
it's important to kind of be on both sides, both the victim and the bully, per se, I guess. And
mm-hmm.
I just wanted to know if you had any advice for children, not children, but sorry, if you had any advice for adults that are reckless with the feelings of children. Do you think that it's a problem within, or they were treated the same way when they were younger? I just wanted to know your opinion on that.
Okay, say the last part again. Something went out when it was about the repeat it again for me one more time.
I was wondering if you had any advice for adults that are reckless with the feelings and emotions of children. Do
yes.
you think they faced the same thing when they were younger? Do you think
oh.
it's a problem within?
Oh, okay. Yes and no. I think sometimes they are afraid as well. A lot of it is fear. And a lot of it, I do think, is because of they were not nurtured in their youth. So because they were sent to bed every night at 7 p.m., or they got spanked every other day, or they didn't have video games, and they didn't have all these luxuries that are out here today, why should their children have it easier than them? Some people do have that mentality, or why should you be afforded an opportunity to do something you want to do when I didn't have that opportunity, or my mother never let me do these things, or my father would never allow me, you know, to work on cars or to do all the, you know, things that the perhaps they think that they should be involved with. So it's like a pathology. They impose it on their children, but I don't think all the time it's consciousable. I think sometimes it's done without thought. It's just because that's the way they were raised, so that's all they know. All they know is to say no and to not let the child do and to not give the child A, B, and C, because that is all that they knew from their life. And that,
mm-hmm.
to me, is very difficult for the child, because what outlet does the child have now? Because it just
mm-hmm.
keeps repeating itself unless somebody in the midst that is able to step in, and I'm going to say the word rescue for lack of a better word right now, unless there's somebody that's able to step in and rescue the child from that situation. Because what you pour into your children repeatedly, they will become, unless they have an outlet. So if you're constantly pouring in negativity and self-doubt and unworthiness, that is what they're going to believe, and that is what they're going to become unless they have somebody on the other side balancing out those thoughts. Both of my children, I have a daughter in college and a son who's married, they are both excellent writers, and I tell them that all the time. I'm not afraid that their writing is better than mine or that their vision is better than mine. I'm not afraid of it. I embrace it, and I actually enjoy it. I enjoy the fact that they're good writers, and I enjoy reading what they write. I'm not afraid of them outshining me, unquote, because to me, we all share in the success of no matter how it comes to be. But a lot of parents, like I said, if they were raised in a way that, you know, they didn't get what they thought they should get, then that's what they impart, you know, on their children as well. They can't handle seeing their child succeed because they weren't allowed to succeed. And that's very
mm-hmm.
deep situations, you know. I just hope and pray that the child does have an outlet, does have someone that can balance out any of the negativity that they're facing.
Just like you were saying earlier, it's very, very important for anybody, especially children, to grow up in a supportive and nurturing environment. Because
yes.
if they don't, they can end up becoming a bully as well, or just like that teacher we were talking about. And they
exactly.
can grow up saying, you know, why weren't you there for me? Why couldn't you be in my life? Why couldn't you be like other parents, you know? And that's not what
exactly.
we want, because I think that can create people who start, you know, I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain, I guess.
No, it's very difficult to try to explain what happens to those children that don't have the outlet, that don't have the support. But like you said, they could take it out being a bully. Or these children could be extremely smart. However, because the home life or because what they're being fed at home, so to speak, is all negative, when they get to school, they can't even perform at the level that they really are able to. So then they're placed in remedial classes, or they're placed in, you know, the lowest class that, you know, that's not doing well because they're deemed problem children. But probably they're not problem children. They just have not received the right nurturing. They haven't been, I'm going to say another odd word for analogy purposes, they haven't been fertilized properly.
Mm-hmm.
So, children, just like anything, but children even more, is an investment. You are investing in this child becoming a wonderful, well-rounded, productive citizen. To me, that's part of the parent's role. But if the parent is damaged because of things that happen beyond their control, then, you know, sometimes the fertilizer that is put on the child is not the right kind. So the child doesn't blossom and bloom like they were designed to do.
Yeah, but I just want to say that in situations like that, I don't want to, you know, say that they all grow up to be bad, because there are always those people who have problems going on in their life that you never would have guessed. Because they can be the people who always wear a smile, people that are always super-duper nice, doing so well in school, never would hurt a fly, and then the moment you realize they're being mistreated or is lacking something in their life, it's like you never even would have guessed, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not always, you know, when you get treated bad, you grow up to be a bad person, because sometimes you can find it within yourself to become a better person.
Yes, I totally agree.
Definitely. Yeah, we're just going to kind of jump around here now. And I was looking at your bio.
We're having some deep conversation, young lady.
Yep. Well, I was kind of wondering what was inspiring you to write the Girl Spiritual Guide, because I was really inspired by that. I thought it was really cool when I was looking at your bio.
Oh, okay. Thank you. The Girl Spiritual Guide happened because I work in Baltimore City, and actually I've visited a lot of inner cities just in my travels. And I'm from New York, like I mentioned earlier. And it came because one summer I was walking the streets, and I was in tears over seeing our young ladies, or certain young ladies, the way they were dressed. The way they were being treated in public by their significant other, or I see them on the subway or the bus, or it's just the way that they were carrying themselves. It hurt my heart. I mean, these were beautiful, beautiful young women, but their attire didn't show that they had any self-worth about themselves. Very tight, very short, very revealing, you know, clothing. Quite frankly, didn't look good. It didn't enhance them in the right kind of way. It got them a lot of attention on the street from the opposite sex, but it was not anything that looked nice, you know. And when I see young women with young men, and the young men is cussing at them, or really screaming at them, embarrassing them, dragging them through the street, you know, because of today's society, I can't intervene for fear of my life. But it just made me stand back and take a look at this and say, wow, is this where we are now? This is where women, young women, think that this little tiny skirt and this very tiny top is attractive, and that's where you want to be? This is how you want to portray yourself? And I just went home and wrote the spiritual guide. it was just like that kind of light bulb moment where it hurt me, though, Kiyasi, and really hurt my heart, because I can see it was like I wanted to walk over to them, snatch them all up, and put them like in a room and say, look, you are worth more than what you are portraying. You are priceless. What you have, no one else has. What you can give, no one else can give. Women have a special vessel. We have a special place in the world. That is the way God designed us. But I didn't see any of that in these young girls, maybe ages 16, 17 to like 21. I didn't see any of that type of, you know, belief in their self. And that's why I wrote the guide. Like, ladies, you know, watch yourself. Guys will tell you anything, you know, to get at you. There are certain myths you may have believed about, you know, diseases and things of that nature. So the guide is not a preachy guide per se. It's more like think before you act type guide. It doesn't say don't do. It has some do's and don'ts, but it doesn't say don't have a boyfriend or don't get married. It doesn't say that. It's like just be aware of these things and about yourself and about what the Bible says about yourself. You know, I had one of my good friends who is an evangelist. I had her contribute some scriptures to the spiritual guide, too, so that young women would have a reference point to go back in case they were never told they were beautiful or they were never told they were priceless. Or they, you know, sometimes, a lot of times, women emulate their mothers. So like I said, this is mostly in the inner cities that I see this. You know, I'm not going to judge or think about what's going on at home. It's more like wake up. It's more like a wake up call. Wake up, young lady. You are priceless. You are better than whatever you have seen in your surroundings and in your life. All these little scanty clothing is not making you look great. It's making you look like you might be, you know, a woman of the night or something like that. And I don't think that that's what they want to portray. They might be seeking attention also, or some guy may have told them this is how you're supposed to look and this is what's attractive. But in the end, they're just doing harm to themselves. And then I created a wristband that says I am priceless on it. And when people purchase the wristband for $2.50, half of that, I support the tween organization out of Atlanta. So I give back to an organization that's working on building girls' self-esteem. But also, Kiyaki, I give away a lot of the wristbands, too. Mm-hmm. So when in our subway station in Baltimore, they have bookshelves in the subway station so people can put books there for people to read. It's like a free library of sorts. And I put mm-hmm. the brochures and sometimes the wristbands in the bookshelf in the morning. And when I come home in the evening, they're gone.
That's amazing. That's really good. That's amazing.
Thanks.
Sorry,
thank you.
I'm starstruck at the moment.
No, please don't be. I am starstruck. I mean, but that's, you know, as a writer, you understand when I say I just came home and wrote it. I just saw that. I came home and wrote it. I said, "Oh no, this is not going to work at all. I can't. I have to be able to influence or make a dent some kind of way with these young girls. You know, like I said, I'm not comfortable enough to pull them to the side and say, you know, you're better than this, because that probably will not be received well. First of all, but I wanted to be able to have an actual pamphlet that people could take and share with others, you know, like, here, yeah, read this. Because sometimes parents have a hard time talking about the birds and the bees with their children, you know. I can understand that. And this brochure kind of helps with that. Like, man, I really would have wanted to tell my daughter about this. Let me just give her this brochure. And maybe the brochure could be a segue to a open and good conversation about self-worth and dating and boys and you know, how you should carry yourself. So I'm hoping that it becomes like a conversation tool for others as well. But it's one of my little projects. One of my things that I want to get more involved with, which is with young women and dealing with young women on that level and just letting them know, hey, you are worth more than silver and gold. You are priceless.
For sure. Can we talk about that for a moment, actually?
Sure.
I feel like I feel like we need to talk about self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
And I
mm-hmm.
think that it's important for people to realize how beautiful they are and how unique they are, and that
yes.
they are worth it, like you were saying, and that you don't have to change yourself to fit in with a certain group of people or society's image of what is perfect. You are perfect
right.
the way you are.
You
yeah. are worth it, as you were saying. And I would really like to talk about that because I feel like whoever is listening could really use that message.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So all of us, I believe all of us have talents and gifts of different nature, especially women. You know, we are nurturers by default. Most of us, I would like to say, are nurturers by default. We are usually the ones who have more of a touchy-feely type approach to
mm-hmm.
love and relationships also. But it should not be just freely given away, you know. A young man should have to earn it. You know, he should
mm-hmm.
have to prove that he is worthy of your time. Like you just said, we're all unique. We're all beautiful in our own right. We all have something to bring to the table. So before, you know, you think that I'm going to go out with you, then, hello, what do you want to show me? Are you going to be respectful of me? You know, are you going to treat me like a, you know, like I need to be treated? You know, this
mm-hmm.
is real life here. Some people, Kiasi might say, is old school. Oh, you know, J.C. Gardner, Jack, she's old school. That's not like that today. That's the problem.
mm-hmm.
In my opinion, you know, yes, true, I am old school. I have no problem admitting I am old school. The problem, because I believe that if some of the things that happened back in the day were still in place now, we may not have so many people not feeling worthy. We may have,
mm-hmm.
Things might still be a little more even playing field, because I don't see that anymore. I think the playing field is now whatever's on TV, that's what we're going to go with. Whatever's on Twitter, that's what we're going to go with. What? Somebody posted this on Instagram. Well, that's the latest right there. You know, oh, she said this on Facebook. That's what we're going to do. So it's almost, I don't want to say that morals and values are thrown out the window. That's not what I'm trying to say. I just think that we have a different definition of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And so when it comes to young women and also young men, I just think that young women still need to be taught that what they have is priceless, and certain things you give away, you cannot get back. You cannot give back your first kiss and things of that nature. So if you're going to give it away, shouldn't the person receiving it be extremely worthy and have passed any and all tests and guidelines? But if you don't have
mm-hmm.
any guidelines set in place already, then you don't have any baseline, so to speak, to go by. So it's very important to me. And there's a lot of articles out here about that. You know, Steve Harvey, who's very popular, you know, he thinks like a woman, acts like a man. I think he tried to break down some of these things as well. And some of the stuff, you know, that he says I do agree with, but all in all, every woman and every person is individual. So
mm-hmm.
it's one, I just think that when we're talking about the self-worth, you have to also know for yourself, what do you think you're worth? Who do you think,
mm-hmm.
you know, would be worthy of your time? And just remember that young men are young men. It's a fact. It's proven that girls mature faster than boys. That is a proven clinical fact. So you have to
mm-hmm.
decide. You have to decide, what are you going to do? And who are you going to do it with? And then also weigh out the consequences of both. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think when you're talking about self-worth, too, it's really important for the individual to have the morals together and to know that, you know, that they are beautiful, like I said, and they also need to know what's okay to them and what's not, and what's okay for other people to do and what's not. You have to have that together. And another part is, you know, if you don't love you, who will? You will care about yourself more than anybody ever will. You need to take care of yourself.
Yes,
I mean,
absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Now, in the middle of the brochure, and Beverly received some recently, there's a graphic in there, and I want you to know that I combed the internet and different graphic websites to get this particular graphic that I wanted, but I work with an illustrator, and I had him draw me the graphic that I wanted to portray. And it's a pair of panties with a lock and key on it.
Mm-hmm.
And over the top it says, don't give up the panties. Because the whole point, even when I'm writing, even in Big Mistake, even in this brochure, I'm not trying to write it from a level of I am this, you know, PhD or doctor or educator or, you know, I'm not trying to talk on those high levels. I'm trying to break it down for whoever's reading it to make it plain English, like there's no interpretation, saying exactly what I'm saying. And then Big Mistake, I wrote it from the language of the way kids talk today, because I'm not trying to talk to you from only my level. I'm trying to talk to you from your level that you're going to understand exactly.
Relatable level.
What,
mm-hmm.
Exactly what I'm trying to say. There's no, you know, there's no second guessing it. So I'm really proud of that graphic. It usually shocks people because they don't expect to see don't give up the panties in the middle of a brochure
mm-hmm.
with a lock and key on it. You know, it's not a key. It has a lock and chain. But the graphic alone says it. Like, if you're going to do this, please think two or three or four or five times. Because once again, once you give it up, you cannot get it back. And it should be someone, you know, the Bible says we are supposed to wait until we are married. And I am realistic. I mean, this is 2016. All I'm saying is before you do it, make sure you think really, really hard, you know, and know your self-worth and know what you're getting into. Because, you know, it's very rough out here just being by yourself. And once you do things like that, you're opening up the door to all kinds of other emotions and feelings, and you just have to be ready. And you also just have to know for yourself, I'm getting ready to make this step. I have all of my tools in front of me. I know what I'm doing. That's very important.
Definitely. We're having a very good conversation here. It's getting very
That's
deep.
A very deep conversation. Deep
Definitely.
Conversation.
Yes,
okay,
you are. This is absolutely wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And I want to just pop in and remind our listeners, you are tuned in live to Pancakes on Tribe Family Channel. You have been listening to our co-host, Ms. Kiyaki Helm, the 14-year-old author of over 12 books, and this includes the anti-bullying guide that is co-sponsoring this show. And she's been speaking with Ms. Jackie J.C. Gardner, author of Big Mistake. I want to have you all continue and actually go into Big Mistake and dialogue a little bit about that. Jackie, if you'll tell us about Big Mistake and read an excerpt, and then Kiyaki can comment. Would that be all right?
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Well, tell us about Big Mistake and continue this wonderful conversation. Thank you so much.
Okay, Big Mistake is a compilation of two short stories, and it's both about middle school boys that get into trouble. And the reason why I wrote this story, once again, the characters came to me, and they were two young boys who kind of wanted to do their own thing. They didn't want to listen or follow the status quo of what they're supposed to be doing because they thought they knew better, and they thought that they could, you know, kind of outsmart their parents too as well. You know, they wanted to take the fast track. So the first story is about Tony, who wants to be an NBA basketball player. That is his dream. And on his way to school with his nerdy cousin, who's very into the books, he is approached by some other kids who want him to come and play a pickup basketball game with them. And the cousin is like, no, this is a big mistake. You shouldn't do this. This is not a good idea. And Tony's like, let me think about it. And then when the other guys show him that he could make money playing basketball, well, that sealed the deal for him. So he sent the nerdy cousin to school, and he went back home to get some money to contribute to the basketball game because he really wants to buy a BMX racer bike. So they head on their way to the park, but on the way to the park, I don't want to give away the whole story, every little bit and piece. I would like people to read it too. But on the way to the park, some unsavory things happen that he's really not comfortable with, especially when they take his money that's supposed to be for the game and spend it on some other things. But still, he goes to the park with these guys, and once he gets there waiting to play, he looks around, and what he sees is all of these other guys who had dropped out of school. He starts to hear and see things that he wasn't used to, and then he realizes for himself, oh, I don't belong here. This is not what my parents would want for me. So he goes and tells the guys he doesn't want to play anymore and he wants his money back. And that didn't go so well. So the guys, they get into a heated argument, and it ends up with the guys chasing Tony home. And Tony is afraid for his life. He left his bags and his book bag in the park, and he ran for his life with these guys chasing him. And after a while, he realized, after several blocks of being out of breath, he realized they weren't chasing him anymore. And he was very relieved, only to look up and see his father. So he was like, uh-oh, I am in such trouble now. So he was, you know, his father takes him home, and some things happened at home that Tony was not aware of as well. And they had a really good conversation, and he told his father everything that happened. And again, I don't want to reveal every little piece, but in the end, he does get his money back, but he also learned a really valuable lesson about why it's important to go to school and not deviate like the way that he did. And he also learned that his parents had his back, even though he made a mistake, which is something key to both of the short stories, is that it wasn't death, doom, and destruction. It's not, I'm going to beat you until you're silly. You know, that's not the point. The point of the book is to show that you can still support your children, even though they make mistakes, because everybody has made a mistake or two or three or 12. And you just have to find a way to deal with it. And there's a way to deal with it and teach a lesson in a positive light. Like I said, it's not always, you know, punishment by whipping or, you know, browbeating, or worse, you know, screaming at them until you've made them feel like nothing. You know, there's ways to get around being a parent that doesn't always include the worst possible thing you can say. Story which also has questions for discussion and also word search puzzle. And the second story is about Clay, who lives with his grandmother because his mom passed away and his father lives out of state. So he lives with his grandmother, but his uncle, who's there sometimes, has this awesome wardrobe. He has all of the latest clothing, all the designer gear, and he has like 25 pairs of designer sneakers. And he decides he wants to wear his uncle's sneakers to school on the first day of school, his uncle's Air Jordans, except they live in the hood. And they live in a very bad neighborhood. And when he gets ready to leave out for school, his grandmother's like, you're not wearing those sneakers. Like, are you crazy? You know, go and take those off. So he does, and he puts on his other sneakers, and as soon as Grammy goes out the door, he changes back into the expensive sneakers. So he eventually hooks up with his friend, and his friend is like, yo, what you wearing? You wearing these to school? Oh, my God, are you crazy? Like, why are you doing this? You know, we're going to get jacked. And he's like, nah, you're being paranoid. What's wrong with you? So all the way to school, the friend is very nervous. And sure enough, when Clay gets to school, everybody notices that he has on these Air Jordans. And they're like, he was like the talk of the school. Like, did you see Clay got on Air Jordans, these $300 sneakers? So sure enough, on his way home, he is scared to death that he's going to get jacked. And by the time he gets home, he has no sneakers. And his grandmother's waiting at the front door like, really? Really? Like, you really left out of here with these sneakers on? So him and his grandmother had a very long conversation. They had like a heart-to-heart talk about life, and she was, you know, basically explaining why she didn't want him to wear them. But the kicker is when he gets to school the next day, he sees his sneakers on another student's feet. And that is where the life lesson comes in. I don't want to share it because I think it's so cool, but I would like people to read the book. But that's where the life lesson comes in, how he handles seeing this other student with his sneakers on. And that's the whole book in a nutshell, the two short stories, just both showing adolescent boys, African-American boys, getting into trouble, but how they still in the end persevere.
Miss Jackie?
Yes. Hello?
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 Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Kiasi, can you hear the show? Oh, okay, maybe Kiasi is having some phone problems. So we'll just give her a minute to call us back.
Oh, sure, absolutely. You can hear me, though, right, Beverly?
Yes, I can hear you. Those are wonderful, wonderful excerpts of your book, Big Mistake, and then the short at the end of there with Clay's experience. Tell us, what inspires the characters? How do you come up with these characters?
This is going to sound really crazy, but they kind of come to me. I actually normally do not wake up and think of, okay, I'm going to write a story about adolescent boys and how they get into trouble. It's similar to my process earlier. They literally show up. They just show up randomly. Sometimes something will set off the character development. I could be at a party, a boy on a bike, and the next thing I know, a whole story will evolve just magically, just like that. A whole story will come to me, this boy on a bike. So it will, certain things I see or experience will influence a story being created. But usually the whole thing will come at one time. Now, I'm going to tell you something interesting about Big Mistake. My son is 26, and I wrote this story when he was around 2 or 3 years
wow.
old.
Wow. Kiasi, did you hear that? She wrote this book when he was 2 or 3. Kiasi's back with us, by the way.
Okay, great, great.
Yes, sorry about that.
That's okay.
Oh, you know what?
Yeah.
This is a technical world, and we just keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts about Big Mistake, Kiasi? I was just asking her about the character development.
Mm-hmm. I think those both sound very, very interesting. I really like the one about Clay, too. Everybody's wearing those Jordans these days. But
yes.
I think both of those stories really, really represent parenting done right, really, really well.
Right,
they both
exactly.
Seem to, yeah, definitely.
And
I'm
you know what I drew
what
out of them?
You?
Before she answers what inspired her, and mm-hmm. and you know, I want her to review the character development for us because
mm-hmm.
we had lost June. But what I drew out of both stories was, right along with what you write about, Kiasi, is anti-bullying. And in order for any wrongs to happen to someone, there has to be a bully. And in both Big Mistake and the short, there's bullying. It's like, wow, you know, there's bullying without you even realizing it. So
yes.
That's what I found hidden. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you're listening to the point of the story and the morals and the, you know, the hidden gems, but then there is that bullying aspect across both stories. Go ahead, though. What inspires you is what Kiasi wanted to know.
And, oh, as I was saying that a lot of times the characters choose me. I don't really choose them, and it could be something that I see, and the next thing I know, I have a whole story that just showed up. I could see someone on a bike, and maybe at that point, like I said, I wrote this so long ago that I see someone on a bike or someone with really fancy sneakers on, and next thing I know, they're sitting next to me going, "Hi, how are you? Guess what I did? I wore these sneakers to school, and I wasn't supposed to." So I was like, "Okay, how are you?" You know, and as I said earlier, they dog me some storylines dog me until I get it on paper. And I misquoted, I said Air Jordans. They're actually LeBron James sneakers. I said Air Jordans. And I know why I did that is because I went back and forth in my mind between Air Jordans and LeBron and Air Jordans and LeBron. But because of the time period of when I updated the story, I changed it to LeBron. So I wanted to make that clear too. However, that's how the character development came. And I have three male nephews that are young. So I look at them and how they act and how they talk to me. And one of my nephews, he's very, he's 19, so he's always schooling me on the latest phrasing. He's like, Auntie Jackie, you got to say keep it 100. You can't say the bomb anymore. I said, oh, okay. So my nephew, he tries to keep me, you know, abreast.
That's cute. Yeah, exactly. You have to stay updated, you know, revise. You have
exactly.
to stay up on the revisions.
Right, exactly. And my daughter,
wow.
She still says, hey, Mommy, things are on fleek. And I'm like, on fleek. Okay, you know. So between my 19-year-old daughter and nephew, they try to keep me, you know, abreast of what's going on with the world and the latest language and how I'm supposed to say things, you know. I remember my daughter first said to me, flips her hair, and I'm like, flips who, what, huh?
So, right. That is awesome. So now tell us what's in store for the writing that's under development. What do you have under development? What's in store for your readers?
Okay, it's for my adult readers, and it's called Heated.
For your children's readers. What's in store for
your
children's readers?
Mm-hmm. Okay, right now.
Pancakes.
What happened? Say it again.
I said for pancakes. What do you have in store coming out for children or for young adults? You know.
Oh, okay. For children and for young adults, right now I have nothing at this moment for children or young adults, except that I do hope to build out Girls Are Priceless webpage. I do hope to be able to build out a webpage devoted to Girls Are Priceless. That is in the extreme baby stages, but that would be the next thing for youth or adolescents or teens at this point would be Girls Are Priceless and building out a specific website with resources and to have a place for them to go to.
That is wonderful. Well, I kind of know a little bit about the backdrop that's under development, and so we are very excited in this camp with Tribe Family Channel for all that is under development. And did you have a short excerpt that you wanted to read from Big Mistake at all so that people can kind of hear the writing style? I find it very interesting. I actually am holding a copy, and I have my bookmark is on page 27 for myself, so I'm getting there. But I really like your writing style, and I thought that maybe we could have you bless the mic with an excerpt of your choosing.
Okay, great. I'm going to read from the first story, Big Mistake, with Tony and the basketball. Wanting to play basketball, and he's on their way. Him and his nerdy cousin are on their way to school, and they run into the high school dropout. So,
all right, and then we'll have Tiasi comment on her take.
So these are Ricky. Ricky is the he is the high school dropout that wants Tony to join him. So Ricky and Craig, for all intents and purposes, are the bad guys. So Ricky spoke first. What up, Tony? You and the nerd on your way to school like good little boys? I'm not a nerd, Corey protested. Ricky put a hand in his face. Shut it, he returned to Tony. Back to my question. That where you two going? Tony said matter-of-factly, course. Aren't you guys? But he already knew the answer to the question because they were out of uniform. Ricky and Craig laughed. "School is tired," Craig snorted. "We already know everything we need to. We're on our way to play some hoops and make some big money." Ricky and Craig gave each other a fist bump. Tony's eyebrows shot up. "Oh, yeah? Tell me more." Ricky nodded. "Check this out. See, we go down to the court on Lafayette Street. We get our own team together. Then we challenge another team for, say, $100. And if we do good, and double our money." Tony's eyes widened. "You guys ever win?" Ricky elbowed Craig. "Show him." Craig reached into his back pocket and pulled out a thick money roll. "Wow," Tony said in amazement and high-fived Ricky. Corey just shook his head, not at all impressed. He never believed Ricky and Craig were ever up to any good. He looked them up and down. They both wore sagging jeans and white oversized T-shirts, along with some dated Air Jordans. Ricky's brown skin was marred by teenage acne. Craig's tan skin was covered in freckles. Corey's facial expression looked like he smelled something that stank, and he was sure it wasn't just that Ricky and Craig forgot their deodorant. He gently tapped his cousin on the arm. "Tony, we're going to be late. I think we should go." "Go?" Craig said, folding his arms across his chest. "You can go, but we just getting ready to ask Tony here to join us." Craig tossed a thumb at Tony while giving Corey the evil eye. "We seen you playing up at the school on the blacktop. You got it going on." Tony felt honored that they were asking him to play. These guys were anybody to mess around with. No, they weren't smart like Corey, but a lot of kids had big respect for them because they were scared not to. I wish I could, but, you know, I got school." "What you worried about school for?" Craig chuckled. "My sister writes notes for us, and we get over all the time." Craig pulled out a handful of prepared excuses for missing school. "Take your pick. Let's see, your grandma's sick, you had the flu, you had to take care of your sick mama. What's your flavor?" Corey shook his head and looked at Tony like he was crazy. "Cuz, let's roll. Can't you see we are wasting time with these two?" And I'll stop there.
That's really good. I like that. I see what Ms. Johnson is saying. I really do like that writing style.
Awesome, isn't it? Yeah, she does. She keeps it real, and the way it just flows, and, you know, when you're reading it, you're there, and, you know, so I think it's a wonderful read. Where can people find your book, Big Mistake, Ms. Jackie?
They can get Big Mistake from my website, booksbyjcg.com. I'll say that again, booksbyjcg.com. And also on Amazon, it's better to look under my my name. If you go to books and put in J. C. Gardner, G-A-R-D-N-E-R, Big Mistake will pop up.
Sounds great, sounds great. And we want to remind our listeners that this show is co-sponsored by Ms. Kiyasi Helm and her anti-bullying campaign. And so we want to have Kiyasi remind our listeners what the anti-bullying campaign is about, the workbook, and where they can find it.
Sure. Okay. So the Anti-Bullying Guide is basically a book written by my family and I that really is a discussion guide for children, family, adults, teachers, anybody you want, just to kind of, you know, open that discussion and make you be able to get into that child's life more so you can kind of know what's going on and see if there's any bullying. Just, yeah, and you can find it at Amazon or you can go to my website, www.writtenbykids.com.
Great, great, great. And let me remind our listeners that Tribe Family Channel is co-sponsored by Genius is Common. What is your genius? Everyone has one. Visit geniusiscommon.com. And you can catch up with Tribe Family Channel at tribefamilychannel.com. you can click on the tab Pancakes and access the link to the archives of this show so that you can enjoy it later and share with your family and friends. I am so honored, and it has been a real privilege and a pleasure to have the two of you dialogue in the way that you have. Kiasi, you know it's always a privilege and a pleasure having you co-host Pancakes. I want to thank you once again. I want to just really, really thank you, and I want to say congratulations to the addition to the Helm family. Shout out to all of the Helms there. And JC, Ms. Jackie Gardner,
yes.
I want to thank you for being here on Tribe Family Channel. And we actually do want to announce that you are part of the Geniuses Common family, part of the Bruce George Media Tribe Family Channel Network. And we welcome you with open arms. And we're excited about all that is to come from Girls Are Priceless and everything that you're doing. So the both of you, enjoy your weekend. I have really, really enjoyed you this Saturday morning, and I just want to really, really thank you for being here and making this a pleasurable moment. So enjoy yourselves. It's been a pleasure, and we will talk soon.
Thank you so much. I just want to say thank you both so, so very much, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart. This was one of the best radio shows I have done, and I so appreciate it. Kiasi, your questions were outstanding and on point.
Thank you so much.
And Beverly, thank you so much for allowing me to be on here this morning.
It is my absolute pleasure. And please enjoy our commercial from our sponsors. This is the conclusion of this broadcast of Pancakes, co-hosted by Kiasi Helm with our guest, author Jackie J.C. Gardner, brought to you in part by Genius is Common.
Greetings. My name is Bruce George, and I'm the founder of the slogan, Genius is Common. The word genius is an elitist word. Of the elitist, for the elitist, and by the elitist. And what Genius is Common basically is doing is it is tearing down the Berlin Wall of the word genius. What I would like for you to do is to join us around the world in tearing that elitist word down and putting it in the hands of the people where it belongs. In actuality, we are all geniuses. We all have a genius seat. Some call it God, some call it other things. You take a young lady who's from an inner city project, housing project, who microbraids hair like Picasso painted, that's her genius. You take a gentleman that has been buffing floors for over 40 years where the floor looks like it's wet but it's dry, that's his genius. What we're doing around the world is we are uploading videos to YouTube expressing what our individual genius is. We would love for you to join us with this campaign. When you upload your video, make sure that you include the hashtag #GeniusIsCommon and geniusiscommon.com. We're looking forward to you being a part of this movement. Signing off, Bruce George, founder of the slogan Genius is Common.